let our hearts and our spirits be filled with wonder again, God, at the greatness of you, the power of you, the majesty of who you are, and yet your humility in coming to this earth and being born in a very common way to live among us, Lord, so that we can experience this new life, so we can be rescued. And God, may that capture and consume us this morning, God. May we get right-sized again this morning to be put in a rightful place, the sense in which you love us and you care about us and our smallness and compared to you, and yet how greatly you value us. And I thank you for that, God. In your name, amen. Have a seat. You know, the wonder of Christmas is so connected. For a Christ follower, it's all about this wonder that we've been singing about a God who would own the universe, create the universe, make us as little specks of humans here on this earth, comparatively to him, and yet come to this earth and live among us. And, you know, I think part of the magic, the wonder of Christmas is really that. And my first point here is this morning that here's a God holding power for the good of others. That's ultimately what Christmas is about. God holding power for the good of others, of us. And that, many people don't kind of consciously think about that or maybe realize that at Christmas, but I think that's what captures us and creates this massive machinery that we call Christmas. At the very core, at the seed of it, I think whether a person is a Christ follower or not, there's something that grabs you when you think about the power and majesty of this God and that he would do this for us, that he would come in simplicity. And we're attracted to that humility, to him coming in this way. I think there's something that's inspiring, that's beautiful, that's wonderful, and grabs us all and says, come with me. If the leader is like that, if God is like that, then how much more can we become like that this morning? And we want to look at that this morning. You know, in a very practical way, even amongst people, we're attracted and inspired by somebody who would come and serve and somehow make it about others and not about himself. And there was a great kind of example of that. None of us do it perfectly, and certainly Travis Lule doesn't do it perfectly, but he was pretty close to perfect on Sunday last week with the Grey Cup and the BC Lions, and that was a lot of fun. I watched that on TV in Saskatchewan, and not everybody was with me. Not everybody was a BC Lions lover out there, but it was fun to watch that. But the accolades that are going towards this guy right now, after he's kind of the Cinderella season, right, to start at 0-5 and then turn around the season and then win the Grey Cup and be the kind of leader that he seems to have inspired in his teammates, they couldn't quit praising him. Arlen Bruce talked about how, you know, if I was his, he says, this is what it says, he's built differently than Drew Brees, but he's thirsty for knowledge. This is where you want to get him right now. Travis Lule is a real deal. He's got NFL promise. If I were representing him, I'd get him $15 million right now. And so, you know, they just love him, the guy. And, you know, there must be some things, some intangibles. We heard him last year speak at a Christian. He shared his story as a Christ follower last year when we brought the youth to a CFL game. And afterwards, they had a time with campus with Athletes in Action afterwards. And that was pretty neat. Even as coach, and Wally Buono doesn't throw out accolades very easily, but this is what he says. Travis Lule is everything good about sports, he says. Says head coach Wally Buono. Sports is about dreams and goals. It's about work ethic and character. It's about role modeling. It's about ambitions. He fulfills every one of those criteria. If you wanted somebody to marry your daughter, the character traits he exhibits would be that person. So, I mean, that's pretty strong endorsement from the coach. But here's what the guy who's writing the article says. He says, you know, Lule laughed off Bruce's comments as the rambling of a teammate made punchy through lack of sleep following hours of post-championship revelry. This is what Lule says. He says, I think he's just paying me a compliment, honestly. He says, I don't want to say the attention is hard, but it's such a team sport. And he talked about the rest of his team as he went from there. But this is what the writer of the article says. The quarterback's inherent humility won't allow him to dream too big. because Lule regards the praise being heaped upon him somewhat uncomfortably, as if the trophies, all-star selections, and consuming media interests place him above his teammates. Here's a guy who said, you know, coming off a great win like that, performing very well as the game progressed, and says, you know what, it's about others. There's something incredibly attractive about humility. And there is no greater example of that than God coming in human flesh to live among us. And we're going to celebrate communion this morning. That really what we're doing is celebrating the tangible presence of God among us, that he would do that. And that's what Christmas is about. It's the beginning of what was ultimately the humiliation of his death. And we celebrate that. It's an interesting kind of irony, and it turns things on its head because, you know, initially in the Greek world that Jesus came into, they abhorred the quality of gentleness or humility. It was about honor, and it was about power, and the Roman rule was by power. But here was God coming and being born in a stable, in a manger. And the whole message of Christianity and the Gospels is about God saying, I'm in favor of those who are humble. I actually have a bias towards the humble, to those who would put me, God, above themselves. It's Greg already read the verse, but it says, God opposes the proud, but favors the humble. That's a pretty strong statement when you think about it. And the reality is that all of us have this thing called pride that's kind of mixed up inside of us. In one way or another, it might show itself through just a consuming interest in ourselves. It might show itself in, you know, I want to be first. It shows itself in so many ways. But to think that God actually opposes that, but he gives favor to the humble, it's worth looking at and saying, how can I grab a hold of that gift at Christmas time, during this season? How do I grab a hold of the humility that is there in Christ? And I would say to you that ultimately, it's about not about trying to be humble, but somehow coming into God's presence and realizing the greatness and the bigness of God, and somehow that kind of right-sizes us. It brings us down to our size, and we go, okay, this is much bigger than me. And it's about God, and it's about others, and I just want to be used by him. It says in James chapter 4, verse 10, it says, humble yourselves before the Lord, and he will lift you up in honor. So somehow, it's about coming and saying, I'm coming before the Lord, and if I get a vision, a picture of how great he is and of his ultimate sacrifice for me, then I'm going to come into a place where, you know what, I'm going to be inspired to be like him, to do like him, to make it about others. So many stories in the Bible really are about people coming into the presence of God, even before Jesus comes to earth in the Old Testament. And they rise to great places of influence when they come into a place of recognizing who God is and understanding him and somehow meeting him. Joseph, Moses, David, Daniel, so many others just were lifted up because they came into God in that way. So this morning I want to focus in on the people surrounding the actual story of Christmas. You heard the Luke 2 story this morning from the kids. That was awesome. And I want to look at a few of the characters surrounding the Christmas story, because everything about it was just kind of like overlaid with humility. The people that God used. You know, I think we get really familiar with this story, but when you take a step back, like, what? He would use a teenage girl getting pregnant before she's married. He would use some shepherds, as was said in there, sheep herders. He would use Joseph and Mary, humble people who couldn't even afford a place to stay on the night of the birth. And then ultimately, there's Simeon and Anna, two very cool figures. So I'm going to just look at the passages relating with these people. And Mary, ultimately, after the angel came to her, she just kind of raises up. She's so inspired that God would come to her. This is what she says in Luke 1, verse 46 to 52. She says, "Oh, how my soul praises the Lord, how my spirit rejoices in God my Savior. For he took notice of his lowly servant girl, and from now on, all generations will call me blessed. For the mighty one is holy, and he has done great things for me. He shows mercy from generation to generation to all who fear him. His mighty arm has done tremendous things. He has scattered the proud and haughty ones. He has brought down princes from their thrones and exalted the humble." Those are great words. It's she recognized, she got a picture of how God was at work. And she was kind of right-sized in her place where she says, really, I'm just a lowly servant girl. And this isn't a girl lacking some kind of, you know, self-esteem issues. She's just coming into a place of recognizing who God is. And that God would choose to come to her and to work through her. She's going, wow, everything is being turned on its head here. She says, for now on, all generations will call me blessed. And isn't that what we do? We're still talking about her generations later. She goes, I'm going to be famous because of this. Why would you use me? She was in complete awe of God's blessing. And she says, here's God at work, bringing down those who are haughty, those who are opposed to him, and exalting the humble. And there's a wonderful promise in there for us. You know, for no matter what our place in life might be, no matter the area of prominence or influence that we might have, and we might say Mary had supposedly very little influence, if we come before God, the promise is that God will bless us, that he will reach out to us, that his, as I said, he's biased toward the humble. And if we come before God and we just say, here I am, God, in my need, here I am in my place, here I am in my work, whatever it might be, in the commonness of life, could you just use me? And when we come to God with that kind of a prayer, God takes that and he works it into something unexpected, into kind of an adventure. With Mary, there was a complete absence of entitlement. You know that word entitlement that just says, I believe this world deserves, you know, I deserve this, I deserve that. I should get that. She was coming into it as like, God, I'm not coming in with an expectation, with demands. I'm just saying, God, could you come and touch me? And, you know, when we enter into prayer with God like that, and we say, God, could you just come in and help me with this situation that I'm in right now? Could you kind of take your power, your grand power, and put it into my spirit? I'm really struggling with the strength for this right now. That's a humble spirit. God says, if you come to him and humble yourself, I'll lift you up. There's another verse in the Old Testament that says, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves and seek my face and turn from their ways, I will heal their land and I will do great things for them. That's what the promise is there for us. And Mary somehow captured that, a key figure in the whole story. She could have kiboshed the whole deal at that point, but instead she just said, okay, I'm willing to walk through this. Whatever you've got for me, I'm willing to go there. A humble spirit. The shepherds, another key figures in the story, who it says in Luke chapter 2, verse 16 to 20, and we heard it from the kids this morning, they hurried to the village and found Mary and Joseph, and there was the baby lying in the manger. And after seeing him, the shepherds told everyone what had happened and what the angel had said to them about this child. All who heard the shepherd's story were astonished. But Mary kept all these things in her heart and thought about them often. The shepherds went back to their flocks, glorifying and praising God for all they had heard and seen. It was just as the angel had told them. They came and they said, you know what? This is this amazing light show we saw in the sky. And here we came. And we went and we checked it out. You know, shepherds, they're not the kind of people who just are going to bite into anything. They're not easily fooled. They're practical men who have little to do with fantasy. And when it says that when they saw what was there and they found the Messiah, they said, we're going to go tell everybody about this. It's kind of neat how God kind of just selected hardworking men to be the first witnesses. You know, in whatever place we might find ourselves in, if we just kind of say, you know what, I'm kind of in that place. I just go to work. God can use us to share his story. He chose shepherds to do that. The first announcement of the Messiah's birth was given by an angel to some anonymous shepherds. Why to shepherds? He could have used priests at the time. He could have used scribes. But by visiting the shepherds, I believe that God just said, you know, my grace is for everyone. It's toward everyone. And in many ways, shepherds were considered lowest rung on the social ladder at that point. We might sometimes say, you know what, God, I don't know, the place that I've got in life, you know, it might not be that great. It might not have met my expectations. But could you just work through me? And one of the ways that the shepherds allowed God to work for them is they became the people who shared the story. It went from them to other people, and it just kept going from there. As we know, we're recipients of that now, 2,000 years later. They went and they talked about God. And you know what? They made the story about God. You know, the shepherds could have said, hey, God showed up to us. Check out who we are. Check what we've done. They could have made the story about them. But as we read the story, it says they just went away in total awe, and they just went away praising and glorifying God. I think one of the ways in which God can use us so much in our lives is when we recognize that the story is really about Him. And we play a significant role in it. It's not like we're devalued in any way, but ultimately, what we share is the story about God. And if you know Jesus, if He's somebody that you've received that gift of grace into your life, God can use that story. It might seem very simple. It might not have a whole bunch of flash and lights to it or anything like that. But I believe Christmas can be an incredible time just to share that story with another person. It might come up in the course of conversation, Christmas, what it's about, whatever. But God has entrusted us with His story. And all of us have a story, and it connects with our story. And the angel, you know, the shepherd said, okay, here's what happened. We were, you know, out on the fields, and this happened, that happened, and we came and we saw it. If you know Jesus, you've got a story of your own. And I think the challenge, the great awe, the kind of the privilege that we have is to share that story with other people. The shepherds didn't look at this as being a burdensome thing, like, oh, I've got to share this story about Jesus. It was like, wow, God showed up. Look at what's happened. We get to do that for other people as well. The humility of Joseph and Mary. I love reading about in Luke chapter 2 later on. It talks about after Jesus was born, it says there was a time in Luke 2 verse 22. What was standard in those times was that people would go to the temple and they would bring a purification offering. It says, as required by the law of Moses after the birth of a child. So his parents took him to Jerusalem to present him to the Lord. The law of the Lord says, if a woman's first child is a boy, he must be dedicated to the Lord. So they offered the sacrifice required in the law of the Lord, either a pair of turtle doves or two young pigeons. What we have here in this story is Joseph and Mary just saying, God, you know what? I'm going to go about doing the common thing. It was just a normal thing for them to go to the temple and to offer a sacrifice, an obedient sacrifice. And I look at that, I think, you know, Joseph and Mary could have gone, well, you know what, this is a special child, and, you know, we know what this is about. But they said, you know what, we're going to follow the law. We're going to do what God's asked us to do. There was a humility in that. And I know that oftentimes what God works through is the common obedient thing that He asks us to do. Like sometimes, one way or another, we oftentimes in our heads go, you know what, I know that God's kind of said that in the Bible, and maybe that's true and is important for others, but I think sometimes it's easy for us to go, but that doesn't really apply to me. You know, my situation's a little bit different. Joseph and Mary said, you know what, we're just going to do the obedient thing. After, you know, 40 days, we're going to go to the temple, and we're going to offer a sacrifice to God. And the deal was, if you follow Old Testament stories, there was the firstborn were the ones that were rescued when in the Israelite story of Moses and back in Egypt. And now the thing to remember that was to go to the temple if you had a firstborn son and offer a sacrifice. You redeemed him. You bought him back to yourself. You recognize that he's God's, but you're buying him back. And that was done through the life of an animal. And that would be a bull or a lamb. But if you didn't have enough money, you would bring two pigeons, two young pigeons. And Mary and Joseph were so humble, they were so poor, that it was just two pigeons that they had for God. And they could have kind of dismissed that offering or said, you know, it's really not worth much or whatever. But they didn't. They brought it to God. And I think the humility that God invites us to is to say, you know, whatever I have in my hand, whatever much or little resources, my abilities, my talents, my resources, I'm just going to bring that to God. It might seem like very little, but I'm just going to bring it to God. And it's amazing what God does and what he takes and does with it. And it was at the temple where a very cool story, and oftentimes we don't talk about this happening, comes about. While they're at the temple, they meet two people, Simeon and Anna, and they get totally blessed. Here's the story about that. It says, at that time, there was a man in Jerusalem named Simeon. He was righteous and devout and was eagerly waiting for the Messiah to come and rescue Israel. The Holy Spirit was upon him and had revealed to him that he would not die until he had seen the Lord's Messiah. That day, the Spirit led him to the temple. So when Mary and Joseph came to present the baby Jesus to the Lord, as the law required, Simeon was there. And he took the child in his arms and praised God. Then there's a few more verses that talk about what he said. But then a few verses later, it says, Anna, a prophet, was also there in the temple. She was the daughter of Phanuel from the tribe of Asher, and she was very old. Her husband died when they had been married only 7 years. Then she lived as a widow to the age of 84. She never left the temple, but stayed there day and night, worshiping God with fasting and prayer. She came along just as Simeon was talking with Mary and Joseph, and she began praising God. She talked about the child to everyone who had been waiting expectantly for God to rescue Jerusalem. So you can imagine, here's Mary and Joseph just coming to the temple to dedicate their child to God. And we do dedications here at Coast Hills as well. But they're just saying, here, God, here's our son, and here's our offering. And all of a sudden, two elderly people show up, and both of them are just completely captivated by this child. What a cool surprise. Complete strangers coming out of nowhere just saying, we've been waiting forever for this child to come. And both of them had received a word, had received a vision from God that had said, you're not going to die before you see the Messiah, the one who's going to come and rescue Israel, rescue the world, really. It's a powerful kind of statement. You can imagine how special Mary would have felt, how special Joseph would have felt at that time. They were just doing the common, obedient thing. And this amazing thing happens in the temple. You can imagine the hubbub around that, because here are two people that are there all the time. They're known by other people in the temple, and they're saying, this is it. This is the child. This is who we've been waiting for. The kind of excitement surrounding that. There's a key words in here. In both passages, it says that they had been waiting expectantly for God to rescue Israel, to rescue Jerusalem. Simeon and Anna were the kind of people who waited for God to rescue them, to really rescue the world. And what we have in the Christmas story is a recognition, and it's how all of us come into the Christmas story, really. All of us enter into the story when we realize that what God's great plan was a rescue mission, that really we desperately needed him. That kind of the whole Christmas story isn't just sort of an optional thing that we either participate in or not, but it's actually what every one of us needs and what, in fact, all of society needs. You know, I don't think we have to look very far, even at Christmas season, look in the news to see the kind of chaos, the kind of non-Christmas spirit that is out there in the world, and how desperately this world needs rescuing. And what Simeon and Anna recognized was that the answer to the world's problems, really, in very simplistic ways, and many people will miss it because it doesn't seem big enough, doesn't seem ostentatious enough, but it's this child, it's God coming in the person of Jesus. And that's where our rescue is found. That's what we celebrate this morning with communion, is saying, you know what, we have a need. We have a brokenness inside of us. There's something that's really beautiful about us and our lives, but there's also something that's really broken. And we don't have to look too far. We can look out there, but we don't have to look much past ourselves, too, to see that there's a bunch of junk, and it really needs God's rescuing. We need him to kind of save us from our own selves, from our own ways, from our own self-centeredness, from our own kind of selfishness. The fact that we find it so hard sometimes to give, that we find it so hard to give forgiveness, that we find it so hard to give help when needed. fact that we find it so hard to give the grace to others that just says, you know what, I just want to bless people no matter where they're at. And here's God saying, here's my gift. It's grace. It's free. It's for everyone. And I'm going to come down into that, whatever that junk is, and clean it up. My friend of mine shared recently with me about an interesting situation he was in where he had been at a restaurant with his family, and his daughter had taken out her retainers out of her mouth to eat the food at the restaurant. And she put it on the plate and then forgot it on the plate when she left. And for those of any of you out there like us who put our kids through orthodontic work, and we realize the price tag on even little things that go in your mouth like that, he's going, I can't lose that. I can't see that disappear. So after they left the restaurant and they realized what had happened, he went back in and asked them if he could go into their dumpster to pull out the retainer out of there. And sure enough, he got right in there and dug his way through, you know, and there's like soggy napkins and, oh, you can imagine all that's in there, you know, from restaurants. Have you ever worked in a restaurant, the slop and everything? And sure enough, comes up, got it. This thing of incredible value. You know what? When you think about the Christmas season, God, in his humility, came into the junk. We have a dumpster diving God. I say that with all respect, that he would come into this world, the mess that it's in, that it was in back then, that is in today, into the mess of our lives, and he would pull out, he would see value in us. That this infinite God left pristine, sinless heaven to search through the filth and rubbish and to rescue us. And that kind of sense gives incredible value to our lives. It puts us in this incredible, humble position before God. But it also says to us, you know what? I can enter into the world, and it might be very broken and mixed up and messed up. But if I, in humility, enter in like God did for me, there's a chance of change. There's hope. There's joy. It can be transformed. And whatever situation we might find ourselves in this December and this season and this week and maybe today, God says, you know, enter into it. If you enter into it with a humility saying the power and the grace and the strength comes from God, he's already shown that to us in history, I can enter in and do that. I looked in a commentary, and I'll close with this, just the humility of Christ. When you look at everything about how he entered into this world, you can find passage after passage throughout that exhibited his humility. Exhibited his humility by taking on our nature, Philippians 2, verse 7. Greg read from that this morning. Exhibited his humility in his birth, in his subjection to his parents. Think about him coming and being subjected to his parents. To his station in life, to his poverty, to his partaking in our infirmities, submitting to our ordinances, becoming a servant, associating with the despised, refusing honors, his entry into Jerusalem on a colt, washing his disciples' feet, his obedience, submitting to sufferings, exposing himself to reproach and contempt, and ultimately to death. And the challenge is for us to imitate that, to come along with that. So I invite Kevin to come up, and he's going to take us and lead us through communion this morning.